Hello, everyone. My name's Roger Kugler. This is Working at Woodworking podcast, episode number 29. This is a continuation of last week when we were talking about pricing your work. It's a mysterious, spooky subject. No one really knows exactly how to do this. And that's really the point I am trying to drive home. There is no magic formula. Last week we talked about formulas, how you can calculate your time, your materials, your overhead, your profit margins, your retained earnings, and the numbers. But pricing is a lot more than that. Pricing really boils down to what will someone pay for your goods or services. And that's what we're going to really dive in and explore today. The last thing I'd like to talk about is number three, the market itself. And I suspect that the vast majority of craftsmen probably overlook this in their pricing scheme. Everyone is concentrating on cost. We just went through this big elaborate formula. Go on YouTube, you can find a dozen videos on how to price your work, and virtually all of them focus on the numbers, the cost of labor, the cost of materials, the delivery fee, your profit margin, so on and so forth. Those are numbers. But what does something really cost? The cost of an item is what someone is willing to pay for it. And if you've ever been to an auction, this is where you see pricing at its absolute best. The auctioneer holds up a pot made out of clay, ceramic, and who will give me $5 for this? Start me out, $5. And 27 hands pop up. He picks one. Then it goes to 10. Then it goes to 20. And it goes to 30. On and on and on. It comes down to two people. 875, do I have 900? 900, do I have 950? 950, do I have 1,000? And you're standing there going, it's just a frickin' pot. Well, to you, it is. But to those two people, it's something much more important, much more valuable. And they are willing to express their opinion with their pocketbook. And so then the thing ends up closing out at $1,200. Your mouth is hanging open. You can't figure this out. And it turns out that 3 months later, they sold the thing online for like $7,000 because it was the rare pot of only one in a series of 12 that was made by this artist in 1887 and so on and so forth. And now you feel really stupid because you didn't know the value of that particular pot. Well, it kind of comes down whenever we're building things too. If all the numbers say that I can make a nice profit by charging $1,200 for this item, but you look around and people are spending $2,000 for these things that are, well, made out of particle board, you might want to readjust your numbers here. Like, you're asking not $1,900, but you're asking $2,400. Well, I can buy that for $2,000. No, you can't, because that one over there is made out of particle board. I've looked at it. This one is made out of high-quality, cabinet-grade veneer plywood. Much, much higher quality. First time that thing sees water, boom, it's ruined. This thing will probably withstand a minor flood. So just because the numbers come up with something, you've got to look at the market. What is the market willing to pay? I was listening to the radio this morning, and a guy was talking about a car that he had bought. He owes $20,000 on it. He's only had it a year, but he has seen used cars exactly like his selling for $25,000. So how does that work? Well, it's the old concept of supply and demand. There's a very little supply and there's a huge demand. Prices are going to go up. I remember 2 years ago when the big nasty started, I was getting phone calls and emails pretty much every day. Can you build me an office table? Gosh, no, I'm so sorry. I can't build you an office table. I am absolutely swamped right now. But there was a huge demand, and if you were in a position to fulfill that demand, you could ask top dollar for that. So I just want you to think about pricing your work in a more universal way, so to speak. Yes, your time is important. The material cost is very important. You need to factor those in. You need to factor in your overhead expenses and your profit expenses, all of your business expenses, you know, your tool fund and your retained earnings and things like that. But you also need to look at the market, at the competition. What are other people doing in this arena? Are you leaving money on the table? And this gets into that thing of doing your bids. If you do 10 bids and you get 10 yeses, you might not be doing something right. Now, that's going to make you feel real good. Yes, got another job. Well, did you get the job or has the job gotten you? There's a thing called a JUB, another job under bid. And if you're just starting out, you're going to probably have a lot of JUBs. Because, you know, this stuff's not really written down anyplace. This is experience. And the guy that's been doing this for 10 or 20 years, yeah, they've done a lot of JUBs. They know that whenever they see this situation, they need to charge more money for that. Else, they're going to end up losing money on it. The idea is that you never let a job cost you more money than your time. If you end up totally eating the materials, that so sucks. You know, I'll sacrifice, you know, yeah, I probably lost 6 hours on that job. That's my mistake. Or if I screw something up, I break something, I miscut something. Ah, man, that really sucks. Hopefully you've kind of built in those types of errors in with your waste calculation. That, you know, we just do stupid things sometimes. You know, we cut the board. I remember I had a customer who wanted a countertop. It was actually a tabletop for an office desk that was 87 inches long, white oak, inch and, no, I think it was a full 2 inches thick. And I ordered that from, well, another woodworker who had the capacity to build that much more quickly and faster and cheaper than I could. But when I ordered it 78 inches long. Oh, stupid dyslexia! And I had to eat that. I had that slab sitting around for years, and some job would come through. I needed something 2 inches thick. Well, I could cut off a little corner. It probably took me, I don't know, 10 years to use that slab up. I made some cutting boards out of it. But, you know, that stuff happens. So the idea is to reduce those ajubes to zero. And honestly, that comes from experience. When you do screw something up and underbid a job, just chalk that up to the learning curve. There's really nothing else you can do. Some people will go back to the customer and say, hey, I really screwed up my bid. Instead of $2,000, it's actually going to be like $2,800. Some customers will begrudgingly pay that additional fee and then tell absolutely every one of their friends, acquaintances, and people they don't actually like at the next cocktail party what you did. And that is going to cost you much, much, much more than the $800. Now, something you can do after the job's done, after it's installed, after they've paid, you know, admit to the customer, yeah, I actually screwed this job up pretty badly. What do you mean? I underbid. I I ate about $800 on this. Oh, no. Some people will actually kind of offer to compensate you for that, which is really nice, but myself, I would turn that down because at the next cocktail party, they're going to tell every one of their friends, their acquaintances, and the people they don't actually like what a great job you did and the integrity that you have that you didn't come back and try to tack something on. Customers really, really hate that nickel and dime. That's what separates a good craftspeople from the bad craftspeople. You may have to eat it now, but you're going to probably reap tremendous rewards in the future because you've simply demonstrated that you have integrity in the workplace. Okay, to summarize, do the numbers. Do the time and materials, your shop rate, your profit margin, all of that. Come up with that number. Look at the competition. What else is out there like your product? What does that cost? And then look at the market. What will the market bear? Just because your number comes up X and everyone else is charging 3X, maybe you should adjust your prices. So how do we avoid these ajoubes? Well, as I mentioned earlier, experience. You do it a couple times and you'll learn. But let's go back into how we bid this job and take a look at the numbers. And every ajoub you do, you should do this. Where did you go wrong? Where did you make the mistake? For me, it was finishing. I would say I can finish this bookcase in an hour. Well, it actually ended up taking me 3 hours by the time I got a coat of stain on and 3 coats of finish. Or doors. I used to kill myself with doors. How long does it take to install a brand new door and then finish it? Well, it actually takes a little longer than you think, and I would always cut myself short on the either painting or staining and clear coat on a door. I finally learned that you need to charge more money for that. So that's where the experience kind of comes in. If you're bidding a job, especially if it requires a technique that you have not done before, research that technique. In fact, go out to the shop, grab some scrap, and figure out how you're going to do that. Sure, it might take you 15 minutes or 45 minutes to work something out, but that is a heck of a lot better than burning 3 or 4 hours on the job and ending up with an ajoub. So don't be afraid to prototype something. How long does it take you to sand, stain, and apply 3 coats of finish on a square foot of wood? If you don't know that, go do it. Now, there are things that could be of help to you. There is a thing called a price guide. Mechanics have been using these for decades. You go in, you have to replace your water pump. How much is that going to cost? The mechanic can open up the cost guide, go to your make and model, and go down the list, water pump. They say it should take a skilled mechanic 0.75 hours, and a typical water pump costs, I don't know, $100. So they can give you a very accurate estimation. It's called the book. In fact, some mechanics either work hourly or they work by the book. Same thing in construction, carpenters. There is a cost book. There's actually several cost books. One in particular is the Contractor's Pricing Guide, Residential Repair and Remodeling Cost with RS Means Data. It's published by Gordian, G-O-R-D-I-A-N. And if you want to see what other people are charging for sanding, staining, and 3 coats of finish on a square foot, you can look it up in here. And it will tell you. They break it down into the work hours that requires for that and also by skill level. So if you have a master carpenter doing this, obviously he's making more money than a laborer. If you are getting into some of the remodeling areas in homes. You're taking out old doors, putting in new doors, maybe doing some drywall work, some trim, installing trim. This cost book could be a really good asset for you whenever you're working up bids. I'll put a link in the show note. I bought mine on Amazon. Not inexpensive. I think this was around $50 or so. But I'll tell you, it can keep you out of a jubes. Now, earlier I had mentioned that if you're doing 10 bids and you get 10 accepted bids, yay for you. Or maybe not. If you're winning every one of your bids that you're putting in, either people really, really like you, or you might be underbidding everybody else, and people are just taking the lowest bid. So you have to take a good hard look here. Are you leaving money on the table? And there's different formulas, different thoughts on this by different professionals, but some people operate on like a 40 to 60% range. If I'm winning 50% of the bids, then I must be doing something right. If I'm getting 40% of the bids, you know, yay me. 60, again, yay me. But if you're getting 100%, you might really be lowering yourself. I remember a job I bid last year or 2 years ago. It was readily accepted, no questions asked. Well, I dug into it a little bit more, and it turned out for that particular technique in that home, yeah, I was under. People were asking a lot more money than what I was asking. I covered my cost. I made a profit that I had plugged in. It just turns out that for that particular job, people were winning with a much higher profit margin than what I had plugged in. But I mean, I'm happy, the customer happy. They're kind of a friend, so you know, there's you know, nothing lost there. Now, if you are winning no bids, well, this could be a problem too. Maybe you are just astronomical. And here, you're going to have to do some research. You're going to have to figure out why. It could be something as simple as, dude, you have body odor, and people just don't like that. Or you smoke, and customers, particularly if you're in the larger cities dealing with a little higher clientele, they may not appreciate that. And to find this out, ask. Just ask. And I think some of your potential customers would actually tell you, you know, why. They might tell you that you were four times higher than the guy that they went with. Whoa. Now you need to do some adjusting. And also, do some shopping yourself. Test the competition. Or if you have a friend who needs, you know, something done to their house, but you don't want to do that because, well, they're friends, ask if you can kind of sit on their shoulder and see what they are getting as far as bids and look those over. It'll give you an idea of the area of what the other competitors are doing, and you could make adjustments so that you're winning, you know, 50-60% of your bids. Now, bids in themselves is kind of a double-edged sword. A lot of people are going to accept the lowest bid, period. Irregardless of all the red flags, of all the things that seem a little fishy, they're only focused on that low number. They disregard that the person, you know, is out of state, they've been here for 3 weeks, they have an out-of-state license plate on their vehicle, which has more rust than it has paint. You know, these fly-by-night, you know, people. You don't want to work for them. If the number is the biggest factor for them, you might want to just stay clear. You want that customer who wants to pay a fair wage for a fair amount of work. So let's say you turn in a bid to someone, let's say for a set of bookcases, and they come back and said, thank you for the bid, we really like everything, but we think you're a little high. Can you lower the price? Now, I know that there are some people who this is kind of baked into their DNA. they don't pay retail for anything. And that's fine. That's the way they've chosen that lifestyle. There are other people who they're just trying to get to pay as little money as absolutely possible. And honestly, they probably don't really care how good of a job you're going to do. So should you lower the price of a bid? Entirely up to you. A few things that you might want to consider before you do that. What I would do is ask, why do you think my bid's high? And they might admit, oh, well, you know, it never hurts to ask. You know, the worst you can say is no. And then chances are, if you say no, they're going to accept the bid anyway. That's, like I said, it's kind of just their thing. They always ask for a lower price. So they come to you and thank you for your bid, but we think it's too high. Now you need to find out why they think it's too high and ask them. And if they say that it's outside of our budget, okay, you didn't do a good job in qualifying what their budget was to begin with. So that's kind of on you. Don't be afraid to ask people, what is your budget for this project? Some people will be a little reluctant to say, or they might say a range, but this is a really important thing to do. And it doesn't have to be, you know, dead on. This is kind of a ballpark. What is your ballpark budget for this? And if they say $300 to $600, and you know that the materials are going to cost twice that, well, you might want to just gracefully bow out and explain that I can't even touch it for that. My material cost is higher. And perhaps you could suggest something else for them to do to accomplish what they want. Or they say something to the effect, we think your price is too high. I just don't understand why this is so much. Ah, now we have an objection. An objection in sales speak is a cry for more information. So you need to go back through and you need to explain why your bid is the number that it is. This is everything from the materials. Explain to them that you're not using particle board or MDF like they saw in Pottery Barn, but you're using high quality cabinet grade veneer plywood, and so on and so forth. Sell the features and the benefits. And just work with them. Maybe you did screw up. Maybe you carried the one whenever you should have carried the two or something like that. And your number is filed up. But through good communications, you can have good sales. Now, there is that person, and they're usually a guy, that just wants something for less money. They don't really appreciate you. They don't really appreciate the job you're doing. They just want a lower number. And you can kind of figure out who these people are. They kind of give off a vibe. And whenever you get that, you just have to ask your question, do I really want to work with this person? I had one of my coaching students tell me a story about a job that he had done or was considering doing for a gentleman who was very wealthy. He, big house, big cars, he had money. But he approached him about building this pretty specialized product for his home. And even before he could get down to the details, he just kept getting this vibe from this guy that, you know, he's going to nitpick every little thing that I do. And whenever he sat down at the drawing board to kind of draw this up and figure out a bid for him, he was talking to some of his buddies, and it turns out that this guy had approached them also, and one of his friends had actually done some work for him. And he said that after I got done, he went around and just pointed this out and pointed this out and pointed this out. He said they were tiny little things. Obviously, if you screw something up, you need to fix it. But these weren't screw-ups. These were just being uber nitpicky. And he didn't want them fixed. He wanted money off. And I have other customers. I'm not going to put up with something like that. And so you're looking at the person, and they want you to knock, you know, 20% off, or they're not going to, you know, give you the job. You just have to really ask yourself, Do I want to do this for 20% less? How will I feel doing this job for 20% less? Am I going to feel kind of slimy because I caved into this person? Am I going to be enthused about doing a really good job and, being human, slack off and give him 20% less? Or do I just want to walk away? Because if you say yes to this guy, you're going to have to say yes to all of his buddies. Because he's going to tell his friends, oh yeah, I got this done and, you know, I got the guy to knock off 20%. Oh wow, what's his name again? And so you get a phone call and they don't tell you that, you know, their friend referred you to him. They're just calling out of the blue, supposedly. And you turn in the bid and they ask, hey, can you knock 20% off this? And if you say no, well, you did it for my friend. Ah, that is just a tough spot to be in. So you can run your business the way you want to. Personally, I don't play that game. I spent 15 years in retail and I saw all of that. And when you come up with a bid, if you've padded the bid a little bit, that's something a little different where you kind of anticipated this. That's one thing. But if you're giving really good, solid bids and somebody wants you to knock it off, a few hundred dollars off, you're going to have to evaluate that really very, very, very carefully. Well, I hope you found this helpful. Pricing is a really difficult thing. I don't know anyone who doesn't struggle with this. A lot of times it just kind of comes down to what the market will bear. I know people who make Twidgets and they've sold these Twidgets for $100, and people buy Twidgets and they kind of are getting tired of making Twidgets. So they raise the price to $120 and they sell Twidgets, maybe a couple fewer Twidgets, which means they're doing less work but making more money, but they're still making too much work, so they raise the price to $140 per Twidget. And strangely enough, now they're selling even more Twidgets than they did at $100 a Twidget. What in the world's going on? I've seen this in various industries. When I was much younger and was studying photography, I had a studio photographer told me a story about a professional photographer who was really kind of getting fed up with the business. He wasn't making that much money and it was long hours and he was just kind of tired. And he decided he was going to give it one more shot, and he doubled his rates and his business increased fourfold. There's just something weird about pricing. If your prices are really low, there's a lot of people who will think that you have really low prices. Why is his prices so much lower than everyone else's? Well, he must not be very good at it. But if you're charging a whole bunch for something, I bet that guy is really good at his craft. I'm going to go with them. And so pricing is more than just numbers. You get into emotions and psychology and all that stuff. So I think probably the best advice I could give people is to try different things. See what works. If you're at a craft show and you have your Twidgets at $25 and nobody is even looking at them, lower them to 10. See if that attracts some attention. Raise the price to 50 and see what happens. Pricing is just really weird because we're dealing with people. And generally speaking, people are really weird. All right, I think we are going to wrap this up. I hope you have found this helpful. We talked about a lot of stuff last week. We've talked about a lot of stuff this week. Don't let this overwhelm you, but you need to pay attention. And probably the worst thing you can do is just be stagnant. And if you remember the first podcast of the year, I recommended that you raise your prices. If you're charging the same thing you did 5 years ago, especially in the economy now, you are probably losing money on that. So don't be afraid to knock those prices up every year. That's something I'm horrible at, and I've been trying to break myself of it. You know, your rent's going up every year, your food prices, your gasoline prices, inflation just creeps along, and your prices need to reflect that, or you're going to end up, you know, working for a lot less money. Recommendations for the week? I have one. On YouTube, there's a channel called Up Flip, one word, and an episode called How to Start $30,000 a Month Woodworking Business. And it's rather long. It's like 39 minutes or so. But the young man who runs UpFlip is basically an entrepreneurial journalist. And he goes around and he interviews startup companies, some older companies, and just what has been successful for you, what have been your pain points, and what recommendations do you have for other people? I found it very entertaining and very informative. He interviewed a gentleman in Seattle who has a kind of a woodwork, millwork, carpentry business, and very interesting. The guy is turning some really good numbers and kind of how he does that. So check that out.